Good afternoon. So the previous presenters, they talk a lot about the burden of asthma, about the prevalence, and about healthcare utilization. And I'm going to talk more about the value of those, the burden of asthma. So I'm going to talk about the economic burden of asthma. I'd like to just share with you only some of the main results of the study that we finished at the Air Pollution and Respiratory Health Branch of the CDC. We all from, except Dr. Benedict, from the same branch, and that study was finished just about recently. It will be published soon in the next issue of the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. So because of the length of the presentation, I will not be able to present all the numbers. So if you want to see more numbers on the cost and on the healthcare utilizations and the methodology, you can check that in that upcoming issue of the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. I'm going to mostly talk about economic burden of asthma. The burden of asthma, as previous presenters talk about, it goes to, it's prevalence of this disease for different categories of population is healthcare utilizations and use of prescription medications, missed work days and school days, and other, issues associated with this disease. And the focus of economic burden is actually on assessing the value of those of that burden. Why is it important? Is that because sometimes that burden, in terms of prevalence, healthcare utilizations of different types of services, like inpatient, ED visits, outpatient, and medications, can be also. When you compare, for example, two chronic diseases, and both of them have those type of characteristics, sometimes it's difficult to compare which one of them actually brings more burden to society. In that sense, assigning a value of those to the burden is allows us to make better comparison. Comparing to the other problems of the that public health faces, and helps to policy decision-making bodies to help better decision of allocating public health resources. The goal of every public health program or intervention is to reduce the burden. And of course, before undertaking any public program or intervention, we need to know where we stand. So we need to know the current economic burden of that. And then, of course, the ultimate goal of any intervention is to reduce that economic burden of asthma. So the objective of the study was to estimate the incremental cost of asthma due to morbidity and mortality from the years of from 2002 through 2007 at the individual level, so at the level of asthmatics, and also what is the cause of that disease to the entire society of the United States. And the word of incremental, it will be, I will talk about that in the following slides a little bit. It's just basically the idea here. And I'm not going to get into too much of detail, technical details, but basically is will tell us how much would society save if we didn't have asthma. Or on the individual level, how much the patient with asthma would save if that patient didn't have asthma. And the total cause of asthma, as probably most of you know, it comprises of total direct medical cost, the cost of missed school and missed work days for adults, the cost of mortality. And that will be basically the focus of this study. We did not include indirect medical costs. For example, as an example of direct, indirect medical costs, is cost of traveling to healthcare facility to get some care for asthma symptoms. Or we will not also talk about, for example, presenteeism, when, you know, when the person is still working or going to school, but because of decrease of the symptoms or feeling bad, actually the productivity can be lower than for the normal person. And also, we are not going to talk about intangible costs like pain and suffering and other type of the problems that are associated with asthma attacks. The main source of the study data source is Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. It's kind of similar to a National Health Interview Survey. Moreover, it actually follows in the next year after National Health Interview Survey is conducted. It goes to the same sample of households and makes some sub-samples of mostly of all households from that survey is also surveyed by Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. It's conducted by Agency for Health Research and Quality and National Center for Health Statistics of CDC. And MEPS uses complex survey design and provides weights for national estimates. So it's nationally representative survey. And every year, they usually, the sample of surveyed individuals goes from 30 to 40,000 individuals, and we will be using the total sample size of which will be around 206,000 persons. Now, the any study in asthma, as you probably know, that all a very sensitive, one thing is sensitive to the definition of asthma, and the second one is sensitive to the methodology that when you when you make your estimations. So what we using, we use in this study, the utilization based. Basically, we will say that individuals has asthma if that person has in 1 year, during the 1 year, has one of these five health services, medical services with primary diagnosis of, with a diagnosis of 493, because primary or secondary is, does not exist in the MEPS. And that is how much we get persons with asthma. It's consistent with other data sources and prevalence of asthma. So for each category of expenditure, which includes hospital admissions, physician-based medical provider visits, hospital outpatient visits, ED visits and prescription medication, and also total, when we sum all these services together, total cost, we obtain two predicted expenditure for each individual. So what we do is that we do regression analysis on expenditure by each of these categories plus total, and then we, once we run on the sample, we have basically for every individual with asthma, we predict expenditure for that person. And then we remove the fact that the person has asthma for that observation. We change that asthma to non-asthma, and we predict expenditure simulating the asthma, the absence of asthma. In other words, the idea here is that, okay, what would happen if that person didn't have asthma? How much would change that the cost of the person? So that's what incremental cost means. And it's very, it's was recommended in the, it's one of the methods that was recommended for more accurate estimation of the cost of chronic diseases. So for productivity losses such as missed school days and work days, because it's counted data, we use negative binomial models, one for children and the age of children from 3 to 18 included, and one for adults. And again, we obtained predicted days for loss for each individual, assuming one is for those who have asthma, and then the second prediction is for those for the same observation, assuming that that person didn't have asthma. and then we valid the day lost. We assume that if the school student has asthma attack and misses the school, we're assuming that one of the parents will stay home. And we also assuming that the parents with a lower wage will stay at home. For work days, we're just using average worker wages in the sample if the adults misses the school, the work. So mortality, this is the second data source. Obviously, we use National Vitality Statistics, Vital Statistics System for mortality. And we use, there is a table that for every category, for every age, actually estimates what is the sort of the burden of that if this happened in terms of productivity losses of the lifetime, and we use that table. And let me tell you that the next few slides will be all tables. I don't expect that it will be, you will remember all of these numbers, but I mean, it's just for reference, and if you, you can find all these tables with standard errors and confidence intervals in that upcoming paper. So, but this is just summary statistics, will tell you a little bit, for example, tell that Charleston comorbidity index is a little bit higher for those person who has asthma versus those who doesn't have asthma. So, which kind of assumes that maybe those person is a little bit, has also some other comorbidities. Also, you can see that there is other differences, for example, in terms of persons with asthma, they have a little bit less education, they have a little bit less income, the rates of having no insurance is higher for those persons too. Now, this is just one, I'm not presenting here for all the years, all the, you know, from 2002 to 2007, we have all these numbers, including standard errors and confidence intervals, but I'm just presenting this for pool sample, which when we combined all the years together. So you see that per person incremental cost of asthma by category, so the total incremental cost for asthma is about $3,260. In other words, if you compare the person, so the additional cost that asthma brings to the person controlling for everything else is about $3,200. And then the largest part is the prescription medication. This is incremental days lost and the value of these days for selected years. This is again for a pooled sample. I was for selected years and then I saw that it was too busy. So I just lived with pooled sample. And you see in the incremental days lost is 262 for work missed days and about one for school during the year. And on the very last row, you see that the total loss to society in billion of dollars, in 2009 dollars, by the way, all the numbers, dollars values, is in 2009 dollars, is for missed work days is 1.66, and for missed school days is 370 million. And this is the cause of mortality, which is the total value of mortality is estimated to be 14.2 billion dollars, and this is just goes by years. And this is the final table, and basically that at the very very first row is the number of people with asthma estimated from that sample and using national weights. So it's kind of, it's consistent with the prevalence of asthma for this type of asthma definition, which is close to CST definition of probable asthma. So, and then it, as you see, it goes from 11 million to up to 13 million. And then the very, very last row, you see the total burden of asthma in the United States, which is for 2007 was over $56 billion. So all the total, including direct medical costs, missed work and school days, and mortality. And so that just summarizing up some of these numbers, the incremental direct of asthma over 2000 to 2007 was 3259 per person. Prescription medication was about 50% of the incremental direct cause of asthma. And the total cause of asthma to society was over $56 billion. Thank you. And
thank you. Great. Well, these were terrific presentations, and I'm sure you have lots of questions. So, anyone want to begin? I don't think we need a microphone. Please.
What kind of work has been done on understanding how the cost might come down if people adhere to their medications? It's the same with diabetes and with tuberculosis, of course, the same concept. Better adherence, the healthier people will stay. I don't know what that is with asthma.
Yeah, we had some studies, stating that if when we use the control relief ratio, okay, so in the numerator you have control relief, and in the denominator you have control plus delivery. So basically, if that ratio is greater, means that the person uses more control and less delivery, which means probably that the person has better control. So if for that type of treatment. We see that for employer-based insured population with asthma, we see decrease in hospitalization in individuals. That's one.
Yes.
Let me follow up. As I recall that last slide, you said most of the cost was medications.
50%.
So if they use more medications, you're going to make the cost higher,
yes,
unless we can get a discount on that.
Yes. But depends also on what type of medication you use. Controller relievers. So if you use more controller, there is a chance that it may decrease the overall expenditure.
I think it's an extremely important point, is the cost of medicines. And there's another issue that I think in all of the chronic conditions that we need to think a bit about, and that's the efficacy of the medicines. You know, these drug trials have such tight exclusion criteria that probably anyone who's in them collectively represents less than 5% of the American population. So the extent to which these drugs are really efficacious for everyone is a sort of the elephant in the room, and is really a problem for clinical care. So the medicines, the controller medicines and the rescue medicines that are used, are the best line of defense in the moment. But there's a question about how efficacious they themselves are in helping the large number of diverse people who confront asthma.
One of the things I was wondering about, and I didn't see mentioned, is in the population that you looked at, is access to specialty care. So to allergy and asthma specialists, as opposed to being managed by primary care and urgent care, and emergency departments. Any information on that? What difference it makes?
Yeah, we didn't look at that in NHIS. An example that I mentioned, we definitely didn't look at access to care in that light. We looked at a different level of access, or a different measure of access to care, which would be having had a visit at all. There are data sources that get at that, and I'm vaguely familiar with a couple of publications on, you know, specifically look at access to care, but NHIS is not a data source for that. I don't know.
Medicaid doesn't have that data on the claims. We can't differentiate the provider and the specialist at all. It's just not collected. Now, I would say in current 2010, with healthcare reform and all, that the data required to be sent into the state on the claims will have, they're expected to have some of that. But up through right now, claims that are coming in do not have that. Now, the things that are reported are not the national data sets. They are smaller data sets. That's all you have in this country are smaller data sets other than what we're talking about here.
I mean, actually, I do have one national data set, yeah. While this example didn't have that, there are two other data sets. In fact, there are one that we're planning to expand the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey and the National Hospital Ambulatory Medical Care Survey, which do sample for specialists so we can tell what a visit was for. If they're surveys of visits, however, so it's not an interview with a person, they're reports of visits. And there's a planned expansion of the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey specifically for asthma right now. NCHS and CDC are cooperating to expand that survey and target specialists. So that's in the works. It just isn't ready today.
It's a really important question because within the clinical community, the sort of conventional wisdom is about 15%, no more than, patients that a primary care physician sees for asthma need specialist care. So, you know, that's a fair number. And the relative cost of that and the relative savings from the quality of care delivered by each is something that's not known. So I'm glad to hear that there's progress towards collecting some of these data.
First of all, I'd like to thank all of you. It was great presentations by all. But I would like to point out that we do ourselves a disservice by lumping all of the Latinos together in a single group, because for several of the presentations, your patterns of findings will change quite dramatically if you disaggregate those Latinos into Mexican and Puerto Ricans, and you will find that the Puerto Rican children fare worse than even the non-Hispanic Black kids. So I'm making a pitch and a plea, since the next survey for that asthma supplement isn't until 2013, to please disaggregate a little further.
National Health Interview Survey.
I can speak to that. We did, in fact. Unfortunately, as the slides that I had in the counts, we were down to cell sizes of like 30 when we started to slice and dice, so we simply couldn't present
the
results.
But you do have it in
We looked at that, and unfortunately, the numbers got so small, even with 2 years of data for the asthma supplement. Now you can do that with the core NHIS, and you know, lifetime, attack prevalence, current asthma, and the variables that are collected normally there. And absolutely, the patterns do change based on country of origin. Unfortunately, for this particular example and for just this asthma supplement, until we have at least one more year, we could present with just any of the counts and any rates from those counts would be ridiculously unreliable.
There are data from the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico that show these astonishingly high prevalence rates. Yeah, here and then.
Studies available comparing our multi-payer system of healthcare with asthma, mortality, morbidity, and cost versus, for instance, Canada, a single-payer health system?
Studies, and I haven't seen a particular study that was comparing one versus another one. One study was done a long time ago, which is kind of a little bit outdated, which was comparing the cost of asthma for the United States, Canada, Australia, and some other countries, European countries. But I think that recently, I haven't seen any studies that was addressing that.
Yes, here.
Dr. Bennett,
yeah.
My understanding in New York is that ambulatory care, Medicaid reporting doesn't include diagnosis.
You have to have a diagnosis to have the claim accepted through our system.
Uh-huh.
Okay? For Medicaid. Yes, you do.
Okay.
So, and we all the claims right now are still ICD-9. So, and we have, you know, what I used here is, it's in the first slot, which is considered primary asthma or care specific for that, and the dollars are paid on whatever diagnosis is in the first slot, the reported slot. Now, when I'm saying slots, I mean, that's true, they're electronic claims. So there's many, what I call secondaries, all the others. So when I do prevalence, I look at everybody who has asthma, reported but didn't get any of that. But, well, you're all, absolutely, in order to have a acceptance.
Beth, do you have any sense of the degree of the problem of clinicians who actually call asthma something else?
Well,
how does it fit into your...
I have done the respiratory, the asthma, the COPD with the adults, that part.
So bronchiolitis bronchiolitis in kids or reactive airway disease, that wouldn't be in your data set.
Well, it's not the data set that I pulled to analyze. I really pretty much what I do has to be believable as much as possible and conservative in a sense. So I take your 493. That's the only ones I pulled in this. Mm-hmm. I have at other times done a separate pull with COPD and then other respiratory. But pretty much, if we're going to put government-based data out, all of the publications I'm seeing are based on the 493s.
Great. Bill?
Well, we started to infer a little bit of information from the cost analysis about what might be most effective. And one of the NIH recommendations is related to community interventions, and I know some of your colleagues have done work on community interventions using lay health workers and all to reduce the triggers and to teach people how to avoid triggers and so on. Has there been any effort to look at the kind of a cost analysis of the impact of using those kinds of interventions on reducing the cost of asthma?
So we just finished the study. And I think that Kagan mentioned about that, we finished a few studies. One of them was the effectiveness of home-based environment interventions, and that is the intervention that's done at home by monitoring triggers, asthma triggers, and removing them. So, and it was found that those interventions were effective, especially for children and adolescents. And then as a second study, we did actually studying what was the economic implication of that intervention. That was the second study that we also conducted. And both of these studies will be soon published in American Journal of Medicine in the supplement. So it's just coming out. We found that it was the result was the significant, it was cost-effective, in other words, to say short, more or for some type of intervention, even cost-benefit, in other words, benefit-cost ratio was greater than one. Yeah, we are that. It's one of the main focuses of the branch.
Mm-hmm. Well, our center has entered into a collaboration with Beth and her colleagues at CMS to evaluate a program and initiative, Robert Wood Johnson Initiative, Allies Against Asthma, which were really community collaborations in 7 communities across the country, trying to bring together a range of interventions and develop policy and change systems to sustain these interventions. And our first cut at the CMS data looked very good related to how these efforts that are more community-wide can reduce healthcare costs. Mike, I have a question for you. Have you learned anything about or what do you think about the problem of the undiagnosed child or adult with asthma. There's a lot of feeding that fits probably in this country is still at a fairly high level, but obviously it's hard to capture it in the NHIS.
I think that of all the surveys that have any likelihood of capturing additional data about people who have not received a doctor's diagnosis of asthma, but who might also have asthma, it would be an in-home survey like NHIS. Unfortunately, we work with the data that we have right now. So yeah, at least given the tools we have, it's very hard to get at that problem on the national scale.
Yeah, for everyone. Yes, please.
I'm just noticing in our asthma home intervention program we've got going, we're seeing a lot of kids coming in with ER and hospitalizations, but then their controller medication is like one controller med that they filled in the year, or maybe two. So knowing that, I'm just a little curious that if we change the controller medication use and we increase that, how are we going to look at costs? Like, are we actually going to show a reduction in costs?
This is the point this gentleman was making.
I don't think that it will necessarily end up with, I think that it needs to be studied. I just cannot say that, but I don't believe because of, you know, the price of medications going up, and because it's becoming larger and larger proportion of the total cost of prescription medication, it may not necessarily end up just decreasing the total cost of asthma. It depends on the population, depends on severity. It's very much depends on severity. As you if it is the population with more severe asthma, if you focus on one of them, usually most of the interventions are very effective.
Yeah.
When you include moderate and in all of the asthma population, usually sometimes it may not be effective. It may not bring to the decrease of the problem of asthma.
But I think it's related to what our colleague here mentioned, and that is, I'm the moderator, right? So I can. The unreasonable cost of medicines in the United States. So here and then back there.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm from Los Angeles, and we have a home visitation case management program. And one of the things that we've seen is that increased controller meds means a reduction in quick relief meds, so that might balance out, as well as better control. So, I mean, I really think that we need to do a better study of that, but I'm hopeful that, you know, better, more use of controller meds will overall reduce the cost. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's related to the ratio, which is a very nice way to look at it, that Tersenbeck's group looks at. Yeah, back here and then over here.
Hi, my name is David Venus. I'm former chief of the California's Chronic Disease Asthma Program. And just a few comments related to use of medications. One is that in a recent study we did multi-site looking at community health centers, we found that there was a very high rate, actually, of prescription of controller medicines, close to 90%, which is great. And yet we still had high levels of morbidity and utilization in these patients. The intervention consisted of the things that we're not measuring, asthma education, home environmental assessment, use of an asthma action plan, which aren't being captured in our current quality measurements. And we found that after those types of interventions, you know, the morbidity did go down. They did have better relief of symptoms. The other thing about cost is we're not really assessing quality of life. And we shouldn't trade off cost of medications, even if the return on investment ends up being not so great. If the quality of life is better and we're reducing, you know, sick days and mortality, that's the real, you know, thing that we should be wanting from our healthcare system. So that's.
Thank you. The gentleman
I'm
back here.
The quality of life point.
Okay, right in here.
Yeah, I mean, the medication is such a tricky thing because you showed average use of medication that would not be consistent with one a month in terms of the controller medication. So I'm wondering, if within the data on controller medications, are there groups that took 10 to 12 per year and groups that took 1 to 2 per year. And in the home visiting, we're finding people have a prescription, but they didn't fill it. They have it sitting there, but they're not using it. So, I mean, it's kind of a, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's tricky.
We have, just in Medicaid, we have about, if you take the whole Medicaid population that has at least one service for asthma during a calendar year, we have about 20% of those folks never have one claim for any asthma-related drug during the year, okay? The other thing is, I have data from 99 through 2005, and I was really excited because in 2005, the hospitalizations finally started to dip. And so I'm really happy that we have more in ambulatory care. I'm not happy about the ED visits, but we all know that that's something to monitor. This is the first year of data, not the first presentation here, but 2005 is the first year that I have found we have enough claims in our database to actually run this, because before 99, emergency room was not collected and reported specifically, nor urgent care. So we're really improving in that, but I agree with you. I don't think asthma is something to where we're going to get the cost way down, at least not in the immediate future. But if we can cost shift, and if the ultimate cost shift to ambulatory and the medications, that's in a sense progress. Mm-hmm. But we also have different pockets in the country, different communities, different cultural groups, and in your area, the costs of all services are still staying up. So you're not seeing that comparable downturn, which is desirable.
It was a bit, sort of odd result on your last slide that people with asthma were more likely to be insured than those without. Do you understand that? Because I think they conflict a little with Dr. King.
Those with asthma were probably less likely to be insured.
Those without were less likely. You had uninsured 0.05 and 0.102.
Yeah.
Not that one, but previous.
Keep going.
Yeah. One more back.
Back.
One more. Forward
or back?
Back. Go back.
To the end.
To the end or to the beginning?
To the beginning, please.
There.
Strange.
It shows the rates of uninsured actually lower in the population with asthma. Well, I don't know how to explain it. First of all, it's unadjusted statistics, so it can be anything. So that's why we're using. This is can be interpreted. I don't know how to interpret, to be honest, but it's just a summary statistic. It's not adjusted. It's not controlled. So, I guess we can.
It does look significant, but.
Yeah, it's all of them significant, but they're not adjusted.
And the results that I presented were simply for those with current asthma. So it was proportional between private and Medicaid CHIP, but it was all of our results that we presented in this example were just for that asthma column. So I wasn't actually comparing people without current asthma.
I can speculate on this. I don't know if it's right, but. People at low income levels can be covered by Medicaid. And folks who are employed and have incomes have private insurance. There's a big swath of people that are on the edges. And for those of us who work in communities where there are a lot of those folks, it appears as if a lot of them are experiencing conditions, including asthma. So I don't know if that is an explanation, but it's
but your,
a thought.
Your data set could tell how many the uninsured with asthma and without.
Absolutely. And in fact, I would bet that almost every publication which has been which has come from the NHIS data set that looks at current asthma, probably either in the demographic table or somewhere in their analysis has to do that, just to get it access to care. I mean, that's sort of one of those proxies that it's a standard in the literature. So it just wasn't there.
But also keep in mind that it is the medical exam-based definition of asthma. So the patient has asthma if you had some kind of medical event, which probably was paid by some kind of insurance. That's why it is.
Yes?
Yeah.
Has anyone studied why people don't use the drawers of the grocery store, don't know how to do it?
They don't even know what
all of the above. Yeah, that's right.
Doctors don't prescribe controllers a lot of the time.
Yes.
I think maybe just a little bit add to this comment. When we studied the effect of influenza vaccination on the overall the rates of and the cost of mortality, we noticed that, and this based on the same data set, that the rates of controller use is somehow associated with other risky behavior. For example, if the patient has less use of control, that person probably will be more likely to be a smoker, will be more likely less exercise, those types of, but it was not focused at the study, but we noticed that there is some association between the level of risky behavior and how we use control of respiratory disease.
Most of the compliance studies have shown use of controller medicines to be in some areas almost arbitrary in terms of the way they're prescribed. And that there's not a lot of difference in lack of compliance across different economic and social groups in the population. Big problem. We have time for one more question.
Okay, so looking at a national perspective on asthma costs, do you foresee reimbursement for asthma home visiting to identify environmental triggers and work with families to improve medication compliance? And if so, what do you think is the burden of proof that public health has to show in terms of changes in morbidity, mortality, or cost? Because it may be unlikely that costs will go down if kids increase and improve their use of medications, for example, especially if they're controller medications. So, and are you aware of any state Medicaid programs that are reimbursing at this point for that kind of service,
for
individual health service?
For community health workers?
It could be nurses, it could be community health workers. Typically, it's a mix of both. But someone going to the home to work with families, identify triggers, bring them under control, and work with and identify whether they're using medications correctly, whether they have an asthma action plan, and working to try to improve care from the perspective of what is actually going on in the home, rather than what is perhaps in the child's medical record at the doctor's office, which doesn't necessarily reflect reality.
Well, Bill and I just heard yesterday that Massachusetts and Minnesota are reimbursing workers to go into homes to help people with asthma and other conditions. So there's at least...
What would be the burden from the federal perspective of what is going to have to be identified in order to see more reimbursement?
Well, I can... that they stay out of the emergency room in the hospital.
So even if we don't see a difference in cost, if we can show that the ER and the hospitalization rate actually increase,
that's
then Medicaid is willing to
look at. But also, quite frankly, you look at all the aspects of prevention funding that has come from health reform, stimulus, the cost effectiveness evaluation research, the CER funds, there is demonstrations and pilots that are aimed at new strategies for improving quality care, quality better life, and cost effective. And obviously, in some of these cases, it is home visits or home intervention. And that's beginning to happen. That's being funded out to states, it's being funded out to providers to pilot tests. All of those are going to be evaluated, and they're on very short time frames with that. But there's a fair amount coming out, and it may be that asthma is one of several chronic conditions that are funded within projects. So I think we're going to see a fair amount of that happening. And then in these Medicare and Medicaid, depending on what it focuses on for both populations, we'll be paying for that. So I just, and the states have tremendous options to pick up on those and develop that the way they want. And here's two examples. So I am very encouraged with the stuff that's been, the provisions and these bills that have been funded. The reserve is where those projects had, in out years, did not have money assigned. And of course, with the pullback on monies and funding for out years, that's going to restrict some. But there's an awful lot that's going on right now. So I think that talking to your state, looking at state health departments, and all our, and your big major providers are submitting requests to get that money and building those. So if you're at the table and build that with home interventions, school interventions.
Okay. On this very nice positive note, let's give our panelists a big hand.